We are doing six different sermons. I'm doing two this month, and then I'm going to be doing four in June about cross-cultural work. And the first one is this one here, which is about going cross-cultural. And next, in 2 weeks' time, I'll be doing about serving at home. And then what I'm going to do is use the BUV titles, which they've got for May Mission Month. I'm just doing them in June. So we'll do those in June from there. So I'm going to start by having a cultural quiz. Now, if you would come along to any of our quiz nights, normally what we do is we get you to stand up and we get you to say, if you think it's correct, you put your hands on your head, and if you think it's wrong, hands on your backside. If you're wrong, you sit down. But I don't want to do that for you today. Today, what I'm going to say is, if you think the answer is correct, I want you to put your right hand up. And if you think the answer is false, I want you to put your left hand up. So that's the commitment. The second thing, as we always say in quizzes, is that the quiz master's answers are right, even if they're wrong. So if you disagree with me, and trust me, because it's a cultural quiz, there's things that you're going to be coming from these various cultures I'm quoting, and you might go, well, that's absolute rubbish. Fair enough, keep it to yourself, because all I'm doing is quoting something I got, and of course, it goes from there. So here we go. Remember, right hand is for true, left hand is for false. It's rude to eat hot food on public transport in the United Kingdom. So if you think that's true, put your right hand up. Come on, you've all got right, left, and let's commit, let's get involved. It's rude to eat hot food on public transport in the UK. That's true. It's considered, who knew, eh? There you go. Let's whip through these. There's 20 of them. Tattoos are seen as taboo in many practicing Jewish, for many practicing Jews. Tattoos are seen as taboo to many practicing Jews. Right or left hand? That, of course, is true. If we know our Bible, we'll know that that's part of the biblical teaching. Giving alcohol as a gift is acceptable in the Baha'i religion. True or false? Giving alcohol as a gift... Come on, commit. Commit, guys. That's false. You don't give alcohol. In Australia, now we should get 100% here, let's be honest here. In Australia, many people believe it's rude to sit in the back of a taxi. You should sit up front with the driver. True or false? That's true. If you actually go most places, if you're a single piece... Hang on, just so to clear this up. If you go most places and you're just a single person in a taxi, you sit up front with the driver. In the UK, for example, unless it's specifically a driver from a Pakistan or Indian culture who's driving a Ford Cortina, which is what they generally do, if you see the British taxi cabs, the big old black ones, everyone sits in the back. Very different cultural thing. When you're in a bar or pub... The Irish believe it's good manners to just buy drinks for yourself rather than for a group you are with. True or false? That's false. The Irish are going to buy you a drink regardless if you want one anyway. It's considered polite to reject gifts in Nigerian culture. True or false? Ooh, that's good. That's false. It's not polite to reject them. You're meant to accept them. Dropping your chopsticks is bad luck in China. True or false? And by the way, you're not allowed to look at anybody from those cultures at this point for any sort of guidance. That's true. In Native American culture, when eating, children and young adults are served by their elders who always eat last. True or false? That's false. I didn't say these necessarily were hard ones. I didn't, you know. In Indonesia, patting people on the head is a sign of friendship. True or false? That's false. You don't go patting people on the head. Leaving your hair uncut is essential practice of the Sikh religion. True or false? That, of course, is true. Arriving late to a dinner party is acceptable in Mexico. True or false?
True. What I liked is everybody from that part of the continent to the world all went, yeah, of course it's true. It wasn't even a blink.
The Japanese tend not to point. Instead, they wave their hands towards the object being indicated. True or false? That one is true. In India, it's impolite to ask someone how much they earn. True or false? Apparently that's false. There you go. Who knew? The feet are considered holy in Thai culture. True or false? That's true. In Saudi Arabia, wearing sandals in public is frowned upon. Saudi Arabia. True or false? No, that's true. Oh no, it's false. You're right. Norwegians always stand up when someone else walks into the room. True or false? Nah, that's false. The OK gesture, that's the circle of the first finger and thumb, is considered vulgar in Brazil. True or false? Apparently that's false, although all the Brazilians got it wrong. Which is why I said don't worry about whether these are accurate. In Kazakh culture, the most honored guest at a dinner will receive the head of a ram, which is then passed around the other guests. True or false? Apparently that's true. There you go. Well done. Cross culture. So I've got to wait for this walk up. There we go. And let's hopefully go. Right. There you go. That's the reaction I needed. Thank you very much. So I just want to explain to all the non-Aussies who are going, what the heck are they talking about? Many years ago, as a way of boosting visitors to our shores, we hired Paul Hogan to become our ambassador. And he used this great advert where he actually says, I'll slip an extra shrimp on the barbie for you. But it's gone down in culture as I'll throw another shrimp on the barbie. Now, we know that, even though in Australian cultures, we don't call them shrimps, we call them prawns. But the whole idea mainly was we were aiming at the USA market. And of course, that's what they call prawns. They call them shrimps. Massive success. Really, really good. Influx of people. Who knew? There you go. Superb. Then, of course, we came up with this one. So for those of us who don't know, our erstwhile ex-Prime Minister Scott Morrison came up with this particular thing and hired a lovely lady, Lara Bingle, who shouldn't be blamed for any things which befell her. She was just doing as she was told. But Lara Bingle was used as the new thing. And you would think, you know, compared to that, that Lara Bingle would probably do a better job. But of course, she concluded with a catchphrase. And the catchphrase, because, so where the bloody hell are you? And basically what it was trying to get across was, hey, listen, we're all ready. The place has got plenty of room. Come on down to Australia and visit. Which to an Aussie mindset actually works quite well. And we understood what we're getting across. Of course, when you show that in the UK and effectively in most other cultures, using that tagline was highly insulting. And so everybody turned off because basically, from our perspective in the UK, when that came on, you're just swearing at us. One word killed a whole thing. I'll come back to that in a second. The point being is the medium and your message. What you have to say is only as effective as the medium by which to use to convey it. The medium that you use can alter your message. Now, Unfortunately, we are apparently a victim of our own effectiveness, that as the lights have got better, our ability to see this has got worse. But what it's talking about is a cultural iceberg, which says at the top, on any culture, you got some things which are obvious: food, flags, fashion, games, all these sorts of things. You can go, oh, that's specifically to that culture, or not specifically to that culture. Unfortunately, you've then got these different communication styles, which are deeper. Maybe it's a facial expression. Maybe it's saying, okay. Maybe that's wrong. And there's different ways, different cultures can either show approval or disapproval. Notions of courtesy or manners. Concepts of self or time. So if you come from a culture like ours, where time is very, very important, then you turn up bang on time, because that's built into us. And in fact, if you don't turn up on time, it's considered rude. If you deal with the Germans, or particularly the Swiss, because they do the watches, but the Germans, the Swiss, the Austrians, very much bang on time. I gather from our Latin American cultures, that's not so much the case. And time has a more flexible perspective. Attitudes towards your elders or adolescents. Approaches to religion or courtship. Different ways you do things. So whenever you approach a culture, you've got to look at it in its entirety. And even myself, and there's lots of us here as immigrants, you come into a culture, and the difference between the UK culture and the Australian culture, you would think isn't that great, until you actually land in it and realise it's not the perspective I had, which was it's the UK and the sun. It's a very different culture. And so you've got to be aware of these things. The aim of a cross-cultural worker is to join with the work of God. And I want to start with that phrase, because too often we go, oh, I'm taking God to the heathens. And it's absolute rubbish. God's everywhere. What you're doing is you're going to a place where you might be culturally different, but you're discovering what God's doing already. So you join with the work of God. You find out what he's already doing. As he has revealed himself in that culture. And you'll find there's various different ways that God has implanted himself within the whole ethos of a culture, which sometimes you just need to tap into and say, this is what it means to be a believer in Jesus. The role is to provide a consistent and truthful representation of the gospel. I think that's true of all of us, of course, but that's the purpose of going across. But it has to be done in this way, in the heart language of the people group they are speaking to within their cultural context. You can't just use the ways and phrases that you might speak to an Australian to speak to a different culture. You can't even use the same words. And sometimes you might be talking about the heart, and a translation of the Bible might talk about the heart, but in another culture that actually doesn't mean anything, and what you would use is the word the bowel. And the bowel means how much you care about someone. I feel it in my bowels. I feel it in my heart. Now, we understand the heart, but different cultures have different ways of doing it. So what you're aiming to do when you're going cross-cultural is to find out what God's doing, seeing how he's revealed himself in that culture, represent the gospel truthfully, and that's the good news, but speak in their heart language, which means you'll need to understand their language. And that could be their national language. It could be their local language or dialect. Speaking to their own in their own cultural context. Romans says this. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can they preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. It's upon all of us to bring this message of hope to everybody we have in contact. And I'll speak more in 2 weeks' time about our local obligation. But when we're supporting those people who are working cross-cultural, we've got to see the high standard that they are doing. They're doing exactly what God's called them. They're bringing the good news to people who may not have heard it at that stage. Now, what I wanted to do was at this point talk about the calling and what the calling of God means upon you to respond to go cross-cultural. But I didn't want to do it since whilst I do actually work cross-cultural, because I'm not obviously Australian born, it's not quite the same as what I'm trying to get across. And since Margaret is and has been working cross-cultural for so many years, she was the perfect person who was going to come and speak today. Unfortunately, she got COVID, and so she's not here. But what she did do, thankfully, is she did an audio recording. So here we go, and I'll turn over to Margaret now.
Good morning, everyone. Andrew has asked me to share how I came to understand God's call on my life to missionary work. Before I go into that, though, there are two important factors that have had a direct bearing on how that happened that I think are important to share first. The first of those is that from a very young age, I was drawn to nursing. I was often bandaging my dolls and teddies and caring for them in my play. The second is that also from a young age, I was intrigued and drawn to the people and cultures in Africa. Where that originated, I have no idea. It just always was. So with that in mind, when I was six, I accepted Jesus as my Saviour. About 2 years later, I was sitting in church on a Sunday evening, watching and listening to a missionary nurse share her slides and her stories of how God had been changing the hearts and lives of the people in Africa that she'd been living amongst and working. I was so drawn to her words that I was literally leaning forward on the edge of the pew bench as she spoke. And then when she was wrapping up her presentation, she asked the whole congregation if, as a church body, we would ask the Lord to begin raising up someone from amongst us to go as a cross-cultural missionary someday. And then she went one step forward and asked this question: would you individually now pray and ask, Lord, is that person to be me? I prayed that prayer right there and then, and the instant I offered myself up, I sensed a deep conviction in my heart that God was indeed asking me to become a missionary nurse to Africa. So that's how it developed with me. Firstly, there were several years where God stimulated in me an interest in nursing and an attraction to African peoples. Before the question was asked, will you use those desires to share the gospel abroad? And when I replied yes, I was flooded with a deep sense of purpose for my life and that perfect, unmanufacturable peace. Thanks.
Even not physically being with us, she's an amazing speaker, isn't she? Feel free to send her an email to thank you for that. The calling upon your life. I obviously have a calling to be a pastor, and I understand the response for that. What you're looking is to say, is God saying, hey, listen, there's something deeper you could be doing. And what is it? In this particular case, we're talking cross-cultural. And whilst obviously I appreciate the younger you are, the more likely that God is saying, hey, come do this. It doesn't mean that you've reached a certain age and God says, I'm not interested in saying to you, come and do something. We can take Moses, who did all his best work when he was over 80. I've known people go cross-cultural work after they've retired, and they've gone and said, this is what I'm going to do with my retirement. That's all just fine. So please don't think I'm just speaking to anybody who's 20 years or around or under. I'm not. I'm saying to you, listen to the call for God upon your life. Think to yourself, what are the things which are important to me, and how can God use those? Tent making is the terminology we use based upon the way Paul the Apostle went and made tents when he walked all around Asia and spoke to people. And what it's really saying is he provided for his own funding whilst he spoke about the gospel to the different cultures, and he had to learn the different cultures as he went. But we talk about tent making now is saying, what gifts and skills do you have to bring to other cultures? Now, when you do that, you think, well, what sort of jobs can I have? Well, there's four things you want to do. First of all, you want a job which gives good contact with local people. You want something which will hit the target group you want to evangelize. It's not a terribly helpful job if you never see any other person at all. You want it to fit with your skills and your personality. You shouldn't try and be something you're not. It, you know, it's disingenuous to you, doesn't help the gospel, doesn't help anybody. You want to enjoy it. Your attitude to the job is crucial. And having witnessed, sadly, some people who work cross-cultural and did not enjoy the experience compared to those who I've seen and they just come back and they're effervescent, you want to enjoy the work you're doing. And importantly, it leaves time and energy for discipleship. You don't want to spend so much time at the role you're doing that you have actually no ability to speak to people and disciple the people who need to hear. And by the way, if you don't take anything from cross-cultural work and you're not called to go cross-cultural work or anything else like that, and you get nothing else from this, that should be our key takeaway for all of us. We should leave time and energy for discipleship. And can I challenge you, if you're working so darn hard that you don't have time to talk to anybody about Christ, you want to rethink your priorities. Now, you might think of traditional things like Margaret, who's a nurse, or doctors, highly useful people to send cross-cultural. Yes, they are. But they're by no means unique. Nowadays, most cultures are calling out for people who can teach English. And in lots of those cultures, you don't need to be a teacher to do it. You just need to be willing. They'll throw you through a course. They'll tell you where to go. And so you can now move into a non-English speaking culture by saying, I'll go doing English teaching. And I'll learn the culture as I go. You might have a skill and gifting with mechanics. There's one particular person, they didn't think they had any particular role, and they said, all I can do is fix motorcycles. At which point a mission organization jumped on them and said, hey, in this particular part of Africa, everybody travels by motorcycle, the roads are atrocious, they're always breaking down, would you come and work for us? We can give you a job. You might have a particular bent towards flying. Mission Aviation Fellowship has people they need to fly the aircraft. They're all around the world. They facilitate other mission organizations. So by you doing that, you might be a flight mechanic. All sorts of different ways you can do that. On rare occasion, ministers of the gospel are allowed in, but that's becoming rarer and rarer in most closed cultures, which is why they do allow people to go in when they're doing other jobs, and they use that as a springboard to speak into the local community. You might be really good at translation work. Before anything can be done to speak into the heart language of people, you need to translate the Gospels in a manner which they can hear. And so loads of people go into other cultures, they're great at language work, and they go and learn the language and translate it and produce, first of all, some of the Gospels and then maybe larger portions of Scripture. I'm saying all this just to spring our minds to say that you may have a skill or a gifting, you've gone, oh, I'm not needed. In actual fact, you can be. Even our accountants here could be going cross-cultural and could be serving in various parts of the world and saying, I'm helping the structures work, and then I'm part of that teamwork as well. I could list, and I did list, and I thought about it, that there's a lot of negativity which happens when you go cross-cultural. There's a lot of things you have to give up. There's a lot of things that are very hard when you become a cross-cultural worker. But I didn't necessarily want to focus on that because I didn't want to depress everybody. It is hard when you go cross-cultural. But I think the thing which we should consider most of all is spiritual warfare. Satan is really, really happy when you sit down and do nothing at all. There's a person on the board who can't be bothered. Right, well, I'll just leave them sat. No problems, I'll move on to somebody else. But if you suddenly stand up and say, "Here I am, Lord, send me," that gets the radar of the enemy. And so spiritual warfare is something which cross-cultural workers face on a daily basis. And there are time and time again, I could give you illustrations of people I've spoken to who said, this particular item was happening at this particular time in the culture I was working. Something went well, and I found out later at that exact time back home, people were praying for me. From people turning up at the right points, from being saved from crashing cars, to having miraculous healings, to seeing people come and be saved. Because spiritual warfare is real, and we can partake in it, because what we're doing is we're praying to God for the protection of those who are serving cross-cultural to where we live. Never stop praying for those who we are helping and sending on our behalf. Took this list from an American in the USA who was serving cross-cultural, and they said the things which helped them get through was sending a letter. Often cross-cultural workers will send updates. Well, the first thing to do is send a reply. Hey, I got it. You'd be surprised how many people don't. But just saying, hey, I got it. Thanks for your local update. Really appreciated it. But even better, sending letters back and saying, really appreciate what you were doing. This is what's going on in my life. This is what's going on in our church life. This is what's going on in our culture. Because one of the things, of course, is if you leave your heart culture, your home culture, and move somewhere else for a period of time, let's just say 5 years, that you can lose track of what's going on. That's a very different world, I give you, from 50 or 60 years ago to the internet world we are now, where you can track down things fairly quickly. But even still, it's a case of saying this is the differences where cultures go. A friend of mine came back and she wondered why cars were offering free air. And she went, what the heck's free air? Because she hadn't realized, of course, air conditioning came standard now with all cars. And in Australian culture, we said, comes with free air. And she's thinking, wind the windows down, right? Because she'd been out of the culture so long. And there's a reverse culture shock which takes place for people who are working and living cross-culture. But the more that we can support and keep informed, the less that reverse culture shock will hit people. Plus also, if you consider and look around the church now, compared to say 4 or 5 years ago, Lord willing, because it's the nature of churches, you'll see new faces that you've got to know, which is great. But if you left 5 years ago on the church's behalf and got settled cross-cultural and then came back, the group of people you knew has radically changed. Well, isn't it nice to give them updates and let people know and give contacts so that when they come, that's noted as well? The other one is go tell other people. Every cross-cultural worker needs as much support as they can, and so it's not just about home church support, but tell other people. By the way, I just want to put a clarifier on that, if you're allowed to, because there are many cross-cultural workers are working within areas where having their name bandied about does not help their ministry and inhibits their safety. So if you're allowed to, go tell others. But assuming that's the case, go tell other people. Tell people what they're doing. It helps their support base. Find out what they need. So when we're supporting cross-cultural workers, what do they need from us? How can we help? Sometimes it might be a care package. Sometimes it might be on home assignment where they suddenly need a car. They don't keep a car here for 5 years just waiting. But maybe you've got a spare one, so when they arrive back. Maybe you're away for a couple of months and you could lend out your house. Who knows how you could help people out, but find out what people need and see how you can support them. If there are cross-cultural workers that you're close with and friendly with and they're happy to, why not go and visit them? Why not stop and by if you're allowed to trip into various cultures? Go see what they're doing. And then, of course, the most obvious one is pray. Back to the spiritual warfare, but the whole aspect, bringing cross-cultural workers before the throne of God, brings blessing and honour to God and protection to them. So I've got two more things to talk about. I like to give you that because obviously you're flagging right now. Here we go, getting towards the end. Short-term mission. There you go. For those who don't know our culture, in Australia, once a year, there is an Elvis festival in a place called Parks, Australia. And what they do is loads of people, and I mean everybody around Australia who thinks Elvis is just the best thing out, dresses up as Elvis, heads to Parks and has a 3 or 4 day festival. I don't know how long it goes for. It goes crackers. And they have a big, huge concert. Everyone obviously has and what they do is they have a parade and there's people in the cars and everything. It's great. It's crackers. I haven't been there, but I've seen it. But what's fascinating about the place is the local church has decided they're going to use that as a fundraiser. And so they get involved and they do food and they do all sorts of things and they get there and they raise a whole stack of money during that period. They get really into it, the whole thing. And then they use that money to send cross-cultural workers on short-term missions. And in this particular case, they send them to one particular place they've picked. And what they do is every year they go back to that particular village and they send workers there and they send workers to do a 2-week stint where they'll build schools, they'll update houses, they'll fix fences, they'll solve problems like drainage, they'll create fresh water, they'll go in and drop in because short term, they've tapped into something which is local, and then they've got people willing to come. Now, I got first introduced to this by a friend of mine who got involved, and they got to know the church, and they were living in Sydney at the time, not Parks, but they got to know it, and so they joined in the team, and they liked it so much they moved towards the area. Short-term mission is God's way of allowing you to test the waters to see if you're open to a prompting by God. It's where we're willing to say, maybe I'm willing to be called to a larger purpose. And so we can do short-term mission where it might include a couple of weeks, a few months. There is a ship, I'm not sure if it's still operating right now, called the Doulos. And I used to travel around. And it used to get into the various ports and just hang outside the legal aspects of our culture, and so it could drop in and we'd drop people in the area and people could come onto the ship. Another friend of mine used to go and fix it up for 2 weeks a year because he had electrical skills. That was his short-term mission. There's different ways you can get involved. It doesn't have to be, oh, I'm not committing 5 years, it's not got anything to do with me. Maybe you've got a skill or a gifting or you've got the time now to say, how can I find what a short-term mission would use me and where can I go and do that? And then finally, home calling. Maybe you should consider a career change. One of the things every organization who is sending cross-cultural workers from Australia to other cultures is doing is requiring people at home base to do all the background work which allows that to happen. Every single one of them needs an accountant. Every single one of them needs a CEO. They all need people who are good at promoting. And depending on what their particular ethos, they'll need different skill sets, all which can be done from within Australia. And so you could be part of a cross-cultural team and never take one step out of Melbourne. But you have to be willing to say, am I going to change my job? A home calling. All of us, obviously, are called to spread the gospel, and we're doing it in different ways. Some particular are called to go cross-cultural, and we should be supporting them prayerfully. But also, if it's not you to do that right now, then maybe it's you to help send them, support them, or be part of a home calling. Maybe you should just consider that, about maybe what God's saying and how we have to respond. Here am I, Lord. Send me. Thank you.